Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Welcome back once again. Martin Popoff here with another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. Check out all our vast array of wise music swamis over there, all these music-themed podcast shows. A lot of great content over there. All right, this is episode 240. I'm calling this producer Chris Tangerides, or Sangerides. That's always a hard one to pronounce, isn't it? But anyways, you've always liked, I get a lot of good comments on the other producer shows I've done, which include, I guess this is all of them, Martin Birch, Tom Werman, Mutt Lang, and Rick Rubin. Wow, so we had 4 other ones. Might do a Bob Rock, not sure, but this is the one that I get asked for the most, so I thought it was a high time that I knocked this one off. Love Chris. Unfortunately, we lost him January 6th, 2018, at the young age of 61. Interviewed him a bunch of times over the years. He was always very helpful. A lot of good content that he gave me is in my Thin Lizzy books. It's in my Judas Priest books, probably in my New Wave of British Heavy Metal timeline with quotes books. What else? We interviewed him for Metal Evolution when we did that series. He's always very helpful, had good things to say, super nice guy. He is a producer that's done a lot of things. I guess the cool thing is, and we're going to get into this with track one, but his very first job as sound engineer was on the amazing Sad Wings of Destiny album from 1976. We'll get into that a little more, but then he moved on. There was a lot of new wave of British heavy metal. He stayed involved. He was a guitarist as well. So he actually played with Moore, the great Moore band, a little bit in later years. But no, he was basically a producer all through this time. Probably his biggest, most prolific thing was his work with Gary Moore. But more on that in a bit. I've broken this into a little bit of categories. I just wanted to celebrate the guy. I wouldn't say, I'm going to give you a quote here where he talks about his sound a little bit, but I don't know if I agree with him very much. I don't think he particularly has a particular sound, but it sounds like there's something he was going for. Anyways, let's get into this and we'll discuss a little more. Take a listen to this. This is Judas Priest with Victim of Changes. All right. The cool thing about me doing that list, where now I've got the songs in them, I can go through and see what I've played. And I've played a lot of songs from Sad Wings of Destiny before over time, but not Victim of Changes. So there's a good little snippet of that from late in the sequence. So this is what Chris said one time when I asked him. He says, "My sound is big, loud, heavy, and clear." I like to think that every band I work with, we get an individual sound for them. So there he is sort of contradicting that a little bit. And he's right. He does get an individual sound for them. There is no trend, really, with these productions. But fundamentally, we still hear me through it, but not to the point of distracting from the band. The whole point of everything is that the production should be invisible. That's an interesting comment, too. So he's not really putting his stamp on it. He's saying that it's invisible. He's wanting to get a big sound. He does mention the guitars, of course. But you should hear the band and say, the band sounds great. And then you find out what's gone on and who's done it, etc. Lips from Anvil is a good example. He says to me, he knows when I've done something because the guitars have this roar to it. There you go, he says. So yeah, Sad Wings of Destiny. I asked him a lot of cool things about this this overtime, but one question I asked him, because again, I'm dealing with this. I've just talked to some of the Judas Priest guys, and I'm going to be talking to Rob Halford again all about the new album, Invincible Shield, which is awesome. But one of the things that people kind of get upset with the Priest guys about is they can't articulate why they were so genius at the time with these things. You know, I've said this about Queen, you know, and Judas Priest, essentially, and nobody else as being this genius thing. So I said, any sort of inspiration from Physical Graffiti at the time? And Chris says, oh, that was me. That was my favorite of all time, and I would try and replicate everything I heard if we were going to do some kind of overdub. Oh, I wanted to sound like Physical Graffiti. That's why the ambient sounds and heavy-duty stuff developed for me, because that was sort of the benchmark. Okay, so he's not really relating it to Priest. And what are some of the high production points on that album, Sad Wings? So remember, and he goes into it here a little bit, and with goodwill, credits who gets credit. But I know he's a big part of the production of this album. What are some of the high production points on that album, Sad Wings? I imagine the beginning of Ripper. He says, I mean, yeah, ooh, crikey. To do those effects that are on Ripper were just insane, just to get the vocals delay to spin out of the speaker. You're in for a surprise. You're in for a shock, shock, shock. That was left, right, left, right. Well, there's no digital back then. We had to use separate multi-tracking, feeding back on each track, panning it. There were like 8 tracks used just to get the vocal effect. Ridiculous, but you did it. Slowing down the cymbals to make them sound like gongs because we didn't have a gong, all sorts of stuff. We would put bits of what we had to try make something that was, you know, I got this idea, how do we do it? Jeffrey Calvert and Max West's role, because they're listed as producers, they were brought in originally. They were engineers from Morgan. That's the other thing I forgot to mention here. So he kind of got his start, it says in Wiki here, when Morgan Studios 3 and 4 were acquired by Zomba Management in 1980 and rechristened Battery Studios. Sangaridis was hired by the new owners as part of a team of in-house producers, which included Robert John Mutt Lang, Martin Birch, Tony Platt, and Nigel Green. So let's see, they were engineers from Morgan, a very hard choice at first because they had been successful with Typically Tropical, Gull Records. So he goes on. Well, Jeffrey, as it happens, was a really good engineer, so that was that. He didn't have much to say with any, but we did a really splendid job doing it. So then I ask him who should get the production credit on the record. I think the production credit should go to the engineers and the band together. It was, you know, them having some ideas, engineers having some ideas. So there it is in a nutshell. Dave Charles, he says Dave did some backing tracks at Rockfield, and that was it. But yeah, an amazing, amazing production for 1976, and Chris had a lot to do with it. There's a lot of cool effects going on. The arrangements are excellent. Great bass, great treble. So I think he starts off on an amazing footing here. You know, frankly, it's probably, you know, going all through the entire catalog, it's probably the coolest thing he ever worked on. It was kind of his first getting a foot in the door. But like I say, you really got to give him credit because I think he's a big part of that production. All right, let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become? Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
All right, back again here on History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 240, producer Chris Sangaridis. Take a listen to this and we shall discuss. This is Thin Lizzy with Angel of Death.
His body was riddled with a disease, unknown to man, so he expected no cure. But before he died that night,
All right. So the category here is Chris had a lot to do with the Thin Lizzy family. I'm going to read this to you first because this was an interesting situation. Renegade, tell me that switchover between you and Kit. So Kit Wolven was involved, taken out of the production of that record. But then what did you add to it? Well, I was supposed to be doing another band that was on the same management called Wild Horses with Brian Robertson and Jimmy Bain. And then they wanted us to do this and it all fell to pieces. And their management said, look, we're not going to do that. But Phil has asked if you would come and work on the Thin Lizzy album. I said, sure, that would be fantastic. Oh, here we go. And I'd known Phil from working with him on solo projects and on Gary's Back on the Streets record. So I arrived and nobody had told Kit, unfortunately. It was quite a sort of awkward couple of days until he realized what was going on. So I didn't think much of that at the time, and I still don't. But there you go. But basically, they'd kind of lost the plot. You weren't sure of the songs that they were doing, whether it should have been for Phil's solo album or should have been for a Thin Lizzy album or whatever. So it's not a very defined area. And we recorded a few new tunes, which were the heavier ones, like Pressure Will Blow and Angel of Death, and all of that. And it's kind of ironic that I did the new one from scratch. But there you go. And then, you know, finished off the next or whatever. It was kind of the time. I don't know. This is interesting. It's not rock. It's not metal. Some of it is. What the hell is that? And unfortunately, when you make albums, I find generally they have to be generally focused on one side or the other. Otherwise, the diehard fans don't know what they're listening to. And that was the case with that. On reflection, now when I hear it, I think it's bloody brilliant. So, and it's my favorite Thin Lizzy album. But the category here, so his biggest thing is, so Chris worked on Back on the Streets, G4s, Dirty Fingers, Back to the Blues, so he's working with Gary later on. Unfortunately, he didn't work on the big album, Still Got the Blues. That was Ian Taylor, and I think Ian did another one or two there. But yeah, he's on Dark Days in Paradise, various live albums, Power of the Blues, Scars, all that sort of stuff, right? And then so Thin Lizzy, as he says, he comes in for Renegade, and then he's there for Thunder and Lightning, which is this band's Black Sabbath Born Again, right? It's that really harsh recording. So that's a really sort of anomaly in the Chris canon, because it's such a harsh, crazy recording. But he is responsible for that one, and of course he was responsible for bringing John Sykes into the band, and he also did Life Live as well. So that was Angel of Death, November 81, off of the Great Renegade album. Take a listen to this. This is our third selection, Tigers of Pantang with Slave to Freedom. Okay, so this is off the amazing, amazing Wildcat debut. Loved this album when it came out. Such a magical time seeing that in the racks with that tiger face on it illustrated. July 1980, so we're right in the main year of the new wave of British heavy metal. Chris, with this he gets a very vibrant, guitar-y, exciting, aggressive sound. The band is pretty loose and trashy. You've got Jess Cox up there on vocals, right? But he also worked on Money First Investment. That's one that not a lot of people know about. Not a great album. But the other big one is Spellbound by Tigers of Pantang. You know, I've talked about this as the middle of the new wave of British heavy metal, the hub of the new wave of British heavy metal bike wheel. Because it's such an absolutely mean, median, average new wave British heavy metal album. But of course, it's got a guitarist on there named John Sykes. And John Sykes gets pulled into Thin Lizzy. And Chris and John kind of work together as the two new guys in Thin Lizzy on Thunder and Lightning. Chris also worked on Rock Goddess, Hell Hath No Fury. Rock Goddess is like the baby girl school, right? So it's the other girl band of the new wave of British heavy metal. Cool band. He worked on a girl, Sheer Greed, with Nick Tauber. Now that is a really interesting album. So it's a predecessor to glam. It's part of the new wave of British heavy metal, but it's a little bit too poppy and mainstream. Of course, Phil Collin goes from this band over into Def Leppard, becomes a big famous rock star. But you know, credit to Girl on this album. It's a beautiful, beautiful sounding album. It's a really, really good high fidelity album. So that's kind of cool. Chris also worked with Girl School on Screaming Blue Murder. Although there's a, it's a partial. He's on three of those. Nigel Gray is on that as well. Sledgehammer, Blood on Their Hands. That's a cool new wave of British heavy metal obscurity. They're kind of like a cross between Tank and Hawkwind. I find they're really kind of rough. Speaking of rough, we've got Spider Rough Justice. Spider is the baby status quo, right? The famous, you know how there's Vardis. You know, basically Vardis and Spider are the two baby status quos that we get, or status quo, as they say, in the new wave of British heavy metal. And then we've got Mama's Boys. Again, a very clean, powerful production, but kind of expensive sounding. We've got the self-titled debut, Mama's Boys and Power and the Passion, the McManus Brothers, right? So yeah, he gets a good sound for them. But yeah, if you look at all of these new wave of British heavy metal things, it's kind of all over the board. We've got various types of sounds, not particularly big albums in this. But yeah, there's some cool stuff there. All right, let's move on to our fourth selection here. Take a listen to this. This is Lords of the New Church with Kiss of Death. Show me your love. All right, so our category here is non-metal. This is Lords of the New Church, 1984. You know, Chris also worked on Comsat Angels. This is a partial 7-day weekend. He was in there with Concrete Blonde, fairly famous band. Bloodletting, Walking in London. Killing Joke, Brighter Than a Thousand Suns, although that's a partial as well. The Straubs, Broken Hearted Bride, Dancing to the Devil's Beat, plus David Cousins' albums as well. New Model Army, which is a little bit like Lords of the New Church, right? So we're talking about this this sort of slightly hardcore, slightly post-punk, kind of a hard-rocking, you know, futuristic, punky sort of thing. So yeah, the Carnival album there, so that kind of lines up. And a weird anomaly that I'd call non-metal is Gillan Toolbox. It's not really a Gillan album. It's an Ian Gillan album. You've heard my story about that, sitting in a hotel room with Ian and looking at this and going, this always bothered us that this was a Gillan album. He looks at it and goes, I didn't notice that. And that it basically on the cover says Gillan. What was that? Naked Thunder? Anyways, one or both of these. This is what happened in this story. I mean, we spent our lives thinking it was a Gillan album. Yeah, it is this one. Yeah. Thinking it was a Gillan album. And he's like, I thought it was an Ian Gillan album kind of thing. A really weird one. And a big seller for Chris. He worked on The Tragically Hips Fully Completely. This is that big, massive cult Canadian band that did huge, huge business in Canada. It was playing, arenas for a lot of their time. But this album went diamond in Canada. So platinum in Canada is 100,000 because we're 1/10 the population of the States. And diamond is 1 million copies. So just in Canada, he sold enough that they sold enough to have a platinum album in the States, which is pretty incredible. And they have tons and tons of other multi platinum albums and stuff in Canada. Yeah, sadly, we lost Gord Downie, the frontman of this band. There's a whole documentary on the insane, crazy last tour he did. He had a brain tumor, and he went across Canada. They had this long set list, and yeah, you could see a whole doc on this. It's a really moving thing. Prime Minister Trudeau showed up at the concert in Kingston. Kingston was their hometown. But yeah, so it's really weird that Chris is doing this record. That's a real anomaly. Back to the Lords of the New Church for a second. So I always loved these guys, or wanted to love them more than I did. Put it that way. I love the concept of them, that crazy name of the band. The first album was just like this, I think it's gold type on a plain black background. Then they had the Nothing Sacred, Nothing is Sacred, whatever it's called, the second one. But this one is kind of interesting. So just read a little bit here. In 85, singer Steve Baters spoke on the album's musical direction. So this is the one Chris produced, Method to Our Madness. When we first got together, it was a nice mixture of our different personalities. We didn't know what we were supposed to sound like, so we more or less discovered ourselves. On the second album, we discovered various different styles we could do, but not in a unified direction. Now we have finally settled in a direction. So this album is actually, I feel like there is a stamp of Chris the Metalhead on this album. So I think he's bringing his metal sensibilities here because it's a big guitar-y. So back to what he said about if he has a sound, he likes guitars. It is a big guitar-y, you know, nice sort of a higher mid-range drums on it as well. So it's a little more of a hard rock production on it. Let's see. Initially, the band felt very stimulated playing together, writing and recording together. The first two self-produced albums went really, really well, according to guitarist Brian James. I love Brian James, too. Of course, legendary damn guitarist. But Method to Our Madness was more of a struggle. Furthermore, the band's record company, IRS, wanted to use an outside producer because the band was losing its dynamic a bit, said James in 2007. So that's kind of cool. So the idea was Chris was brought in to kind of rescue this band from themselves, from being self-produced. And it turned out to be a semi-popular album. It might be my favorite, although maybe you feel like that post-punk integrity a little more with the first two. I think people might lean to the first one as the best one. Ira Robbins of Trouser Press described the album as a cross between the Stooges' Raw Power and Billy Idol's Rebel Yell. That's actually quite accurate. He called it the band's least distinctive but most popular sounding record. So that's kind of cool. I thought that was cool. The wiki mentions, I didn't check these ones out, but I mean, the wiki mentions, and I don't think these are fulls, but that Chris worked also, you know, keeping it non-metal here. Joan Armatrading, pop star Tom Jones, Jan Hammer, and remixed the song Never Let Me Down Again by new wave band Depeche Mode for release as a single. So yeah, it has a lot of bits and pieces kind of all over the place. I think we're kind of getting the clear idea of what his main things are. So let's move on to my favorites. This is my favorite stuff that he did. Take a listen to this. This is Y&T with Breaking Away. I could be wrong, but it seems that the storm just ain't there. I'm coming into myself. Let me leave you far behind. I'm changing my world. Breaking away. All right, so September 1983, this is the great Mean Streak album. By the way, buddy of mine, Tim Durling, has a Y&T book out now called Down for the Count. It's a panel book. I participated in it. Pete Pardo did as well, but it's a panel that goes through all the albums. It's selling well. You can get it on Amazon. That's Tim Durling's Y&T book. This is probably the Mean Streak album, Y&T. So they go Yesterday and Today, they go Struck Down, they go Earthshaker, Black Tiger with Max Norman producing, and then Mean Streak. And I think this is the greatest sounding album Chris Sangaridi's ever worked on. The sound is absolutely gorgeous. It's conservative, but it's just got beautiful, beautiful drum sounds, and then half of that work is done by the magnificent Leonard Hayes anyways. But the guitar sound, everything sounds really good on here. Chris gets a great guitar sound. But interestingly enough, I've always found it amusing that it sounds fairly like a fair bit like Black Tiger, even though that's Max Norman, who's another big, famous, important producer, Ozzy Osbourne, right? I think this is Chris's crowning glory as a producer. Other ones that are super, you know, that he's famous for is Judas Priest Painkiller. That's a beautiful, beautiful sounding album. It's probably his biggest triumph as a, the Tragically Hip, I think that's more down to Tragically Hip. But this one, I think Chris had a lot to do with Painkiller, you know, bringing Priest back. Obviously, it would all fall apart again. But they got a gold record out of this. People love that album, especially younger Priest fans. They think it's close to their fit, you know, the best album they ever did. But the sound on it is amazing. It's super powerful and exciting and trebly and bassy, and you know, he works with Scott Travis on that. He basically brings Priest back to making this pure, super heavy, exciting metal album, like I say, that goes gold. He did Exodus Force of Habit. A lot of people look down on that album, but I think it sounds magnificent. Like I say, this category is my favorite sounding albums. And again, you know, that's one where they think, you know, the band's moving a little bit too far away from thrash, but it is a beautiful, beautiful, huge sounding record. And then the other ones I really like that he did are Metal on Metal and Forged in Fire for Anvil. Those are two absolute heavy metal classics. They sound great, super powerful, exciting. Like he said in that quote about Lips, they get a beautiful guitar sound. Rob Reiner's drums are just pounding on here as well. The cymbals sound great. So yeah, 82 and 83, two absolute classics of that connective tissue idea of speed metal. Right, so this is like better than new wave of British heavy metal, but it's not as futuristic as Kill 'Em All and on into thrash sort of thing. So a great albums. I love the energy on these, and a lot of that comes down to Chris. Some honorable mentions, so just some dribs and drabs of other things Chris did over the years that we should thank him for. He's a partial producer on King Diamond Conspiracy, UFO, A Conspiracy of Stars. There's that word again, but I remember interviewing him. That was probably the last time I interviewed him. I believe I talked to him for that album. He's a partial producer on Black Sabbath, The Eternal Idol. Just had a big argument fest with my private email industry group all about the Tony Martin years. And I think we all came to a consensus that The Eternal Idol is actually the best of those years. Chris worked with Yngwie Malmsteen on Facing the Animal, Inspiration, Magnum Opus, Angra, Fireworks, Girl School, Guilty as Sin, so he's returning with Girl School later in life. Anthem, a few albums, including Heavy Metal Anthem. Halloween, Pink Bubbles Go Ape. You know, that's the one with the silly title, the weird cover. But it's actually a really good album. People were a little annoyed at them. It's a little off the wall, but it's a good, solid album. We've also got Bruce Dickinson, Tattooed Millionaire. So Bruce knew the value of Chris and brought him in to do his very first solo album. Pretty cool. Anvil, This Is 13. So he comes back with Anvil later on. Here's an amusing one. Anybody remember the band Fort Knox? I always think of Fort Knox and Vendetta together as just these weird sort of standalone only albums, I think. But yeah, this was just a weird heavy metal album that went nowhere from early days. Speaking of going nowhere, Slave Raider as well, and Tiger Tales. He worked on, you know, one of the British bands that was trying to be part of the hair metal thing, and it never really worked. So there you go. That's the great Chris Sangarides. I wanted to mention as well, I always run out of time for this, but we've got enough time. The last episode was 239 Biggest Heavy Metal Stars. I wanted to mention some comments from the Facebook page. Let's see. GM White writes, the rating system on this one is tricky because famous usually means most known and not one. No one on this episode's list is more recognizable than Ozzy. Yeah, when I did that episode, I was wondering, where do I put Ozzy on this? But everybody's telling me I basically got him kind of too low. Even a kid who's into metal might not know who Angus Young is without his schoolboy outfit on. An extreme metal fan might not know who Bruce Dickinson is if he's not on stage with Maiden, but everyone who has minimal awareness of popular culture knows who Ozzy is when they see him. They might not know his albums or album titles or that he was in Sabbath, but they know his name. Even Post Malone fans, there's a lot of non-rock metal people could identify Ozzy. James, probably not. Hetfield he's referring to there. Dave Grohl has reaffirmed his metal cred with his Dream Widow Project album, possibly the legitimate number two. He says, question mark, side note, best. Okay, let's see. Craig Morehouse says, my 80-year-old parents know who Ozzy is. There wouldn't be anyone else they would know. Maybe Gene Simmons, he says. Blaze Barshaw says, both had TV reality shows, which at least doubled their name recognition with the non-music folks. Awesome, Blaze. That's a great point. Then Craig answers back, sure, but my dad knows who Ozzy is because he's the guy who bit the head off a bat, right? let's see. Jason Toombs says, I love listening to Martin, but rarely agree 100%. I think Ozzy is easily the most famous metal star in the world, partly because of the Osbournes television show. Joe Becht, great supporter of the show, good buddy. He's on our Contrarians panels quite a bit too. He says, just listen. Is this your list, our list, the general public? The average person on the street knows Gene Simmons, Ozzy, Alice Cooper, and Slash, but doesn't have a clue who Bruce Dickinson or Rob Halford are. I was wearing a t-shirt with Angus on it, and everyone at the party I was at asked if it was Mick Jagger. Nevertheless, this was another fun episode. And he says, and another thing, Brian Johnson lives down here, and no one notices him when he's out in public. Pretty funny. Let's see. Andrew Theo says, I think it's just the fact that the U.S., at least, no one has much knowledge of classic rock stars as they do fake pop stars, especially here by Disney World. You always have famous rock stars visiting with their families, and no one has a clue except the few heavy rock fans that legitimately follow their music. John P. Folkers writes, hard to argue with list. I would add Zakk Wylde to the tier two list. He's connected to huge acts and he's toured incessantly with one band or another. King Diamond is still up there since he still tours regularly, perhaps tier two. Tobias Forge is one on the rise. He's making Ghost a big arena band, whether you listen to it or not. Tool, lead singer, comes to mind. Absolutely, that's a great one as well. Mick Phelan, great supporter of the show, always has good ideas. Says, yes, great episode. You could have delivered three episodes a song for each of the 15. It's hard to argue with people here. Maybe it's nothing to do with music, but every human knows who Ozzy is. James Hetfield, just a great job being in the spotlight. Speaking honestly about his flaws without letting the fame machine eat him up and define him. It's interesting how the Lemmy legend grows more and more with time. I hope these people calling him a legend will check out Motorhead's albums and give love to the music. Awesome, Mick. Thank you for that. Jonathan Jordan writes, a great episode about how sad all of them are in their 60s and 70s. Think only Slash is still in his 50s. Come on, Rock World. Let's start building some new bands and stars. By the way, Dave Grohl, he's as heavy as Axl or Steven Tyler, much of Kiss. That's a great point. You know, Foo Fighters, as time goes on, you know, we think it's poppy, but it's just as heavy as that old 70s stuff, right? Martin Olson writes, Dave Grohl is 55, young by most standards. They talk back. Yeah, he's pretty close. Where would you put him? That's me talking. So there you go. So there's some nice input to the last episode about the biggest heavy metal stars. If you like this episode or the show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Becht, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Michael Gendelman, Tony Hicks, Carl Isaacson, Monty Olson, Augustine Garcia de Paredes, Philip Edward Phyllis, Steve Polari, Dan Rosenson, and John Stuckey. You know I write a bunch of rock books, 120 of them apparently, and the latest ones are, you can get The Kiss, you can get the Pink Floyd, I got more Who in, for some reason The Who keeps selling my Quadrophenia book, I had to order more, but the big one is The Perfect Water, The Rebel Imaginos, that one's doing well, that's the follow-up to Flaming Telepaths. That is a complete weird, crazy conspiracy theory, occult weirdness, Imaginos lyrics kind of thing. Very proud of it. It's probably the coolest thing I've ever done, in my opinion. And all of that is at martinpopoff.com. I will leave you some homework. Go listen to that first Tigers of Pantang album.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com. or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at RNR Archaeology.